Ah, yes. Welcome once again to the Earth Mysteries Show. I'm Haynes Ely. This is KVMR 89.5 FM, and we're on the World Wide Web at kvmr.org. I've got Mukti on the phone. We're going to have fun talking to her for the next hour, but before we start, I would like to thank a couple of people who are underwriting the show. Mountain Stream Meditation, offering insight meditation based on a 2,500-year-old Buddhist practice, emphasizing awareness of breath and body, heart and mind. Nevada City Group meets Mondays at 7:30 p.m. at Wild Mountain Yoga. Other regional locations are at mtstream.org, and that's M like the letter M, T like the letter T, mtstream.org. Thanks to Sierra Solar System, serving the foothills and the environment for 29 years, offering PG&E and remote system design and installation. Their solar-powered showroom and warehouse is at the Alternative Building Center at 563 Idaho Maryland Road in Grass Valley, 530-273-6754 or sierrasolar.com. Thanks also to Hummingbird Medicine, where Valerie Lowe provides therapeutic massage, peer counseling, sound healing, and workshops at 419 Spring Street in Nevada City, 530-265-2042. Online at hummingbirdmedicine.com. Gift certificates are available. Hummingbird Medicine, sound mind, sound body. Mukti, are you still there?
I sure am, Hank.
Great.
Yes.
Nice to talk to you. And you're in Maui, of all places, doing a retreat with Adya Shanti.
I am indeed.
And for many of our listeners that don't know you, Adya's been on the show a couple of times, and my late wife brought him to Grass Valley to do some retreat work here. And you are Adya's wife.
Yes, I am indeed.
And also an awakened person. And you don't have to answer that one. I'm just telling the listeners what they're listening to, who they're listening to. I met Adya in 2001. It was right after 9/11. It was the week after 9/11, and it was in Berkeley.
Okay.
And ever since then, I have been a rabid fan of his. I tell listeners that if there's anybody that they want to listen to, he's the guy to go see him in person in the Bay Area, or get one of his CDs or DVDs. And Prajna, one of his students, lives here, and she's been on the show a number of times, and she shows movies of Adya at the Briar Patch on Thursday. I think it's the third Thursday of the month.
Wonderful.
So you have quite a following here. And,
yeah.
And you're going to be here. You're going to be doing a retreat March 6th at
yes.
Unity in the Gold Country at 180 Cambridge Court in Grass Valley. And I'm going to repeat this over and over while we're talking, because people driving around in their cars that don't have a pencil will want to know this.
Mm-hmm.
They can call Kathy, and her number is 320-1246, 320-1246, area code 530-320-1246, for information about that retreat.
Yes, and yes, she can. And Kathy will let them know all the information. And also I'll be speaking Friday night, March 5th, at the same facility from 7 to 9. So if people want to come and you know, get a feel for it before deciding to come to the retreat, they're welcome to do it that way, too.
So what is your transmission, if I might ask?
What is my transmission? Wow. You know, transmission is something that's really outside of words. So that's the nature of transmission in general of really anyone. It's difficult to put into words what my transmission is. It's something that someone could experience directly.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much just in my presence, but in the direct knowledge of themselves. That direct inner knowing of one's essential nature is the same knowing that I share. So if they know that within themselves, then they would recognize the transmission that I have in that regard. And then, of course, there's the transmission of the moment, you know, whatever current feeling is being experienced, or emotion or flavor of all the, you know, many varied expressions of form can be transmitted in any given moment. We experience this all the time. You know, if somebody's depressed and they come into a room and, you know, they're under a dark cloud, that's their transmission in that moment. If they're having like a really happy day, then that's their transmission in that moment. And of course, all of those moods and feelings and emotions change all the time for myself or anyone. So the particular flavor of my transmission would be different depending upon the moment. But the essential transmission of self-knowledge is beyond any particular flavor.
When you say those things, those moods change in every person at every moment, mm-hmm. I think that the average person thinks, well, when you wake up spiritually, if you're enlightened, you avoid all that stuff. It doesn't happen anymore. All of a sudden, you're in nirvana. You're living in a warm bath of euphoric ecstasy, and now you don't go through human emotions and ups and downs.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, wouldn't that be dull?
Well, straighten us out.
Well, you know, I think that when we have an openness to life, there's an openness to the whole gamut of human experience. And as everyone who's a human being knows, there is a whole gamut to our experience. And I would be no exception to that. And I don't know anyone who's an exception to that. That almost, you could call it almost like a law of the universe, which is that all experiences come and go. And therefore, you know, all states, all moods, all everything comes and goes. It's never like going to be a permanent state, because that's just simply the way reality doesn't function.
Well, everybody has their own ideas about reality. My personal idea about reality is that you can live on the plus side most of the time without going through as many negative emotions as other people do. So I always try and look at the good in things and look at the best of everything in my life and try and have gratitude for just being here on the right side of the turf.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you have enough gratitude and if you try and lift somebody up every day in one way or the other, that your life really works well.
Yes.
And if you whine and criticize and complain, condemn, judge, those things are a cruel mistress. Your life follows that pattern.
Yeah, yeah. When you have all the resistance to all of those things, you know, the judgment, the, you know, the whining, the, you know, the argument with life, then you're in for a lot of suffering and an unpleasant experience of life. And I think when I was mentioning that sense of openness, there can be the openness is like a counter energy to that resistance or that argument with life, and so it does definitely translate into a different experience of living. But it would also include an openness to the whole gamut of human feelings, and often when the openness is there, then some of the most difficult feelings can often move through in a very organic and kind of smooth way without getting lodged in the system and stuck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Buddhists have an expression that's easiest to ride the horse in the direction he's going.
It's a great thing.
Yeah, and when you said, you know, the openness to life or that... not arguing with life. I've never heard the expression arguing with life, because how can you argue with what is?
Yeah.
But so much of the stuff that I talk to people about on the radio is their argument with what is.
Yeah.
And how do you tell someone, wait a minute, this is it. This is what is. Why are you arguing with it? What's wrong with you?
Wrong with you?
Yeah. And then you're judging. There's something wrong with that, but
yeah.
But how do you get your people to listen to you to not argue with life, to live life and be life?
Well, I think people know from their own experience that when they do that, it really hurts. When they're really resisting things as they are. It takes a tremendous amount of energy, first of all,
mm-hmm.
to resist things as they are. And it's kind of a permanent state of I don't know, kind of, well, I was going to say fight or flight, you know, just on the nervous system level, but it's just a permanent state of efforting and struggle and seeking for another experience than the one that's actually happening. And so I think people know from their own experience that not only is that exhausting, but it's it divides us against life because life is presenting in a way that we're disliking, and it just is painful, and it causes a lot of suffering. And when they feel that in themselves, that's when they tend to come talk to somebody like me.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always, there are already typically some degree of readiness to look at things afresh. And then when they really see deeply that it's not working for them, things tend to loosen in that stance that they have against life. And part of that process of somebody really beginning to see that something isn't working for them is to also see like what they have invested in their argument. Just for an example, somebody who's just saying something like, you know, life shouldn't be this way, or my life shouldn't be like this. When they're having that feeling, if they just begin to relax into, when they just begin to tell the truth of, wow, this argument is really painful, you know, arguing like this about the way my life is really painful, and they start to let themselves feel that, then there can begin to possibly enter a sense of like, wow, maybe I need to rethink how I'm relating to my situation here. And just the telling the truth of that, like, wow, this is painful, and I'd like to change. Just that statement in themselves already, they can begin to soften.
They have the intent to change.
Yeah. Yeah, and that opens a lot of energy, right? It frees a lot of energy up because they're stopping in that moment. They're stopping their argument just long enough to feel that things could be different. And then, you know, they might take it forward by, you know, really seeing if it's, if that's really what they want the most. Because sometimes what people want even more than things to be different is they want to be able to have that gratitude like you were talking about, or to appreciate what's given, or to basically they want to stop wanting it to be different. And, you know, so that whole feeling of wanting it to be different and arguing against it, they want that to stop more than they actually want a different situation. And so just beginning to dialogue with them in a way, and that's always fairly spontaneous, so I don't have it completely mapped out for a great pat answer, but these are just like beginnings of how I would begin to open it up for a person.
When I meet people who are, I don't want to say boastful, but they're stuck in a position of, I've done this for a long time, so I'm an expert and I know more than you. And sometimes I'll talk to someone, they'll say, oh, I've been doing Vipassana meditation for 30 years. And I look at them and I'll say, don't you feel just horrible? And they go, what do you mean? I say, well, you've done something for 30 years and you haven't woken up. Isn't that, looking back on your life, just a total waste of your life? And they usually get very defensive.
Yeah.
And my whole point is, anything that you do that's geared toward waking up, if that's your goal, has to have the intent to wake up. And you have to say, if it's not working, then I'm not doing something right. And maybe I should look into some other way of waking up. But you have to have that intent, that idea that this isn't it for me. I need something more than what I'm doing to wake up. And I remember Adya's story of just, you know, sitting in his little meditation place in his backyard, hitting his head on the wall and just trying and trying and trying so hard, and nothing was happening until something happened. But at least he had the intent. He had the will. He had the wish to wake up. How does one convey that to someone that, hey, you can wake up in this lifetime, and it's not impossible. And here's an example. I'm talking to Mukti on the radio, and I talked to Adya on the radio. They're living examples. It can be done. How do you convince somebody of that?
You know, I wouldn't even try.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew that was the answer.
Right, sure. I mean, you know, I like to not, like, push against a person in that way. Basically, people are following their nature, and some people have like a just kind of integral in their nature is like a tremendous curiosity about reality or the truth of things, or the like maybe there's a movement to know God or to know themselves or to return to source or, you know, have a deep sense of silence or rest or peace or whatever it is for them. And I think it's, I tend to sort of speak to people in a way that might draw that out of them, what it is that they really, really value the most dearly. And then, you know, encourage them to be true to that and to follow that. And some people may be like very, very true to, let's say, the sense that they really want to know God. They may never even have heard of awakening, you know, and they could find themselves really discovering the very same truth as somebody who says, I want to awaken. So, like, for example, in my own life, I never really held things in a way where I thought, I have to wake up or I want to wake up. I don't know about never, but for the most part, I just tuned into the sincerity of my heart and wanted to see that through into its deepest fruition. And I still feel that way in myself, you know, to really come to know that more and more thoroughly in a more and more refined way and more a way that I can express in this world of time and space. And so to me, if somebody had that kind of interest, I wouldn't value it any less than someone who said they wanted to awaken. And in fact, I'd probably take it over the person who said they wanted to awaken, because the person who says they want to awaken, they may not actually know what awakening means or is, because there's no way you can know that in thought or in reference points. And so, and often that person has an interest in being an enlightened person, and people themselves, they don't wake up. Consciousness wakes up within them, and it reveals that it's really very little about them. It's really not such a personal matter. So I wouldn't be super concerned if someone came to me and you know, was interested in discussing with me their meditation practice or something, and they didn't necessarily express an interest to, they didn't say those words like, I want to awaken. Yeah. Do you get the feel of where I'm going with it?
I get the feel exactly. Yeah. When you said consciousness is what wakes up, you know.
Yeah.
But it seems to me almost that you have to, you know, hard to say it, an intent for that consciousness to wake up. I'm going to give you an example. For me, I like lucid dreaming. I love lucid dreaming. It's just a wonderful state.
Uh-huh.
And yet most people have a lucid dream now and then, and they don't know how to get back to that place, even though if they like it. And I tell people one of the ways you can is to always, as much as you can, like a mantra, ask yourself, am I awake? Am I dreaming? Am I awake? Am I, you know, as you go through the day, having a sandwich, looking out the window, am I dreaming? Am I? And just keep asking yourself. Get into the habit of it, so that even when you're sleeping, meditating, what state you're in, there's this little voice saying, am I awake? Am I dreaming? And at some point, consciousness will step into it and say, here I am. It just shows up, because you're always trying to figure out where you are, whether you're awake or dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And if you said, I want that consciousness just to be here, I don't know if it would or not, but just the fact that you're opening the door and constantly questioning what state your mind is, what state your consciousness is, eventually consciousness is attracted to that somehow.
Yeah, it's like you're in many kinds of inquiry, you can invite consciousness forward.
Our guest today on the Earth Mystery Show is Mukti, and Mukti's going to be here. She's going to be in Grass Valley March 5th in the evening, then all day March 6th for a retreat. That's going to be at Unity in the Gold Country at 180 Cambridge Court. And there's a lady named Kathy who has a phone number you can call for more information about that. Her number is 530-320-1246, 320-1246. And you can just show up at Unity in the Gold Country at 180 Cambridge Court, 7 o'clock or probably before then, to get a seat, 7 to 9 on Friday, March 5th, to hear Mukti and hear what she's about. You're hearing a tiny bit of her now. And I highly recommend being in her presence. I've been in Adya's presence, her husband, many times, and there is something about actually being in the presence versus just hearing or seeing a video. And we talked about that a little bit at the beginning of the show when I said, what's your transmission? I thought your answer was very good. It's really something you can't say, but you can sit with somebody and get it, whatever it is.
It's interesting about transmission, because it's not necessarily like, we were talking about different levels of transmission.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there can be transmission of like a sense of like a given flavor or presence, or maybe even in the presence of a certain person, you might be open to a certain kind of state or experience. But the transmission that's outside of all words, that cannot be spoken, is also really beyond any sense of presence or any sense of experience or it's beyond any state. It's really a transmission that alights the consciousness that's present in all of us. So if you're with a person whose consciousness is like a light within them, and you're in their presence, it's possible that with a great degree of openness, that light like reverberates within you as well and begins to come alive.
Mm-hmm. Induction.
Yeah. But it's not necessarily like some people may kind of almost I don't know what you might call it, like window shop. They like go around and check out all these teachers, and they go just to be in their presence in hopes that they're going to get some transmission. But just that wanting and that expectation can often prevent a sense of true openness within that individual. So,
The wanting and expectation, you have a picture in your mind of what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And you're looking for that picture. And I don't know you, but I know Adya. I don't have any picture of what I want to get from him.
Yeah.
There's no guru with robes. There's no library full of books. There's nothing. It's just the guy, just being with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I even asked Adya one time. I said, "What happens to all these gurus, all these Indians that come to this country and they get a lot of followers and they get a lot of money, and then they go crazy? They end up with $10 million in a Swiss bank account, or they get deported, and they have hundreds of women followers that they're sleeping with, and what went wrong?" And he said it comes from the top down. You know, that's what's coming from them passed down to their followers, and that's, I guess, what the followers are looking for. They wouldn't get together.
Yeah.
And it's hard to advertise for you, or hard to advertise for Adya, because if someone says, well, what, you know, tell me about his teachings or something, and I go, well, you really ought to go sit down with a guy and just be there. You really ought to just listen to him talk. But it's not the words, it's something between the words. And I know Adya talks a lot about silence. Maybe maybe you could say something about silence too, but it's, you know, it's certainly in the silence, not in the words.
Yeah, yeah. It's sometimes the word can be words can be helpful to kind of give the mind context so it'll relax, you know, and but for the most part, the teachings that have the most power are transmitted in silence. And what can I say about silence? Well, you know that the sense of the individual that feels separate from life, we could use the word ego if we want to use the word ego. It's a I'll define it for now in this way, that it's often a movement inside, a movement that's either you know, grasping for something that it wants or pushing away something that it doesn't want. And it's it kind of knows it knows itself through these movements of pushing and pulling, that ego structure, if you want to call it, or just the sense of me or sense of separateness. And that identity of separateness that knows itself through this pushing and pulling, when it quiets down and begins to experience a sense of silence, that sense of center, the me that's at the center of everything, can begin to soften when silence is felt and experienced, and that sense of me can give way to an undivided experience of life. And some people may prefer the word stillness, because you can almost feel in yourself, you know, this pushing and pulling and referencing and seeking and wanting and desire and all these movements that make us stirred inside. They stir us up. When one begins to sit in silence or stillness and just relax and let all those energies recede and settle and calm down, then there can be a whole different perspective of life that's outside of all those other reference points.
I like that. Stillness, yeah. I'll use stillness instead of silence. It's a much better word.
Yeah, both are great. It's sometimes just easier to use the, because people can get the feel of it quicker maybe with the stillness thing.
So if you're doing a silent retreat, I'll think of it as a still retreat.
Yeah.
So how about the folks that are into Zen sitting, and they'll sit for 5 hours, 7 hours in a very uncomfortable place,
yeah,
trying so hard, so hard. I mean, that tension you're talking about of the fight or flight is, it's not stillness, and they're trying so hard. What do you tell someone? Don't try so hard. Just what's the antidote for endless sitting? If one needs an antidote for endless sitting. See, I'm a practical person. I ask you these questions because I like the hotwire reality. I'm looking for the conclusion. I'm not looking for the process.
Yeah, I hear you. It's a good question. It's a little bit of a tricky question because, you know, it all depends how that person is sitting, you know. If a person is sitting in stillness and they're experiencing genuine stillness, then, you know, no problem. If they come to me and say, you know, I've been sitting in stillness like 5 hours a day and I still have a monkey mind, or, you know, I still feel divided against life, or I still feel like there's a sense of a seeker, like right at the center, that's still, you know, running the hamster wheel inside, you know, then I would probably ask them how they're meditating. I'd probably break it down, ask them what they're doing, sometimes once in a while I'll focus on posture or how they're sitting, but just actually what's their intent. Why are they meditating? What is it that their intention is? what is it, where is it that they're putting their attention, you know, things like that. And so I'll kind of track what they're doing, and I'll help them find their way into a more a beneficial practice. If somebody came in and said, how do I meditate? That's always great, because they're starting fresh. And, you know, let's say they have another meditation teacher, like at a Zen temple or something, then, you know, not that last person, but the first person. The first person I might just kind of work to refine what they're doing and kind of steer it in a certain direction. But if somebody came in fresh and just said, how do I meditate? Then I get really excited, because I can structure it. You know, I can point them in the way that I think is the most efficient. And often what I'll do in the beginning is speak to them somewhat about the nature of mind and how, well, let's say I might even back up before that and really talk to them about why it is that they're sitting and what it is that they're really interested in. And, you know, probably the majority of people who come to talk to me in private or even in groups, they have some interest in finding some sense of peace. A sense of peace or a sense of rest or a sense of well-being or harmony. And so let's just take that as the foundation for now. Typically what I would do is speak to them about mind and how if their intention is to find peace, they don't necessarily have to have the intention to sit down and stop the mind. They've already set their intention, which is their intention is to discover peace. So one thing I might do is engage them in an inquiry process about peace. So like we were talking about how there's ways that you can call consciousness forward. And one of the ways is through inquiry, through questions, like you were saying, am I awake or am I asleep? Another question might be, in this scenario, something like, when they sit down to meditate, to ask the question, is peace present? Here and now, is peace present? And the question will...
the answer is always in the question.
It's always in the question, right. So on one level, the question invites forward a sense of peace, but it also engages our senses into an opening into a sense of peace. Like, almost like people can ask that question, is peace present here and now? If you can almost feel their whole energetic body like relax outward into a sense of receptivity, mm-hmm. to open to see if they can sense that peace. And just that movement in and of itself brings tremendous peace to the being. Just mm-hmm. that opening and that stretching out and that alertness and receptivity and that listening, it automatically brings about a sense of slowing down that whole seeking process and slowing down the energies that are, like what I was calling earlier, stirring mm-hmm. inside.
Mm-hmm.
And it halts them, and it brings a sense of alertness that's receptive and open to that sense of peace. And so that's a way that I would might encourage someone to begin meditation practice.
Mm. And well, what is observing? What's aware of that peace, or that what's aware of that sensation of the peace?
I believe I may know where you're heading with the question.
A person becomes open when you do that
yeah.
with them, and they, there's a bit of peace, there's a bit of
yeah.
relaxation. But who's aware of, what's aware of that? Who's going, ah?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you may have a sense yourself. What's your experience shown you?
It's one of those wonderful lectures by Mike Snyder. It's who's looking out of these eyes?
Yeah.
Who's looking out of your eyes? What is it that's talking to you on the radio right now?
Yeah.
What is it that's listening to this?
Mm-hmm.
The person driving around, they got their radio on. The person sitting at home has their radio on. But what's aware of this?
Yeah.
So, you know, I keep asking other people, I keep asking myself, what's aware of this? Who's looking at this? Who's listening to this?
Yeah, and how what has been your experience of that inquiry? How's it been going?
For me, it causes almost ridiculous mirth. I have trouble not giggling sometime because it just seems so obvious that everything that's going on is for my own amusement, and I get accused of being smarty or being arrogant or all kinds of things because I don't take it seriously. I told Adia when I first met him, someone asked me, well, how did 9/11 affect you? And I said, you know, it was a gorgeous day. It was a fall day. God's in his heaven. The birds are chirping in the trees. The sun's shining on me. It's wonderful. And they thought I was just being smartass. And I couldn't think of anything else at the time. You know, that's how 9/11 affected me. It was just a beautiful, beautiful day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something someone told me happened far, far away. And I thought, well, it's just a beautiful day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry something happened that bothered you far, far away. It doesn't seem to ripple this day here in Grass Valley or Nevada City at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it affects me. I mean, it makes it very hard to be concerned with all the stuff that's going on. And yet I don't want to feel like a non-empathetic, non-compassionate person. I know my mind says you have to have compassion. You have to feel these things. You have to sympathize with them or, you know, do something about them. And yet that whatever it is that's talking or listening or seeing doesn't care at all. It's just the way it's supposed to be. It's that, you know, that's what is.
And
it's,
yeah.
It's not something that I have to be concerned about. I mean, like, the reason there are wars and catastrophes and earthquakes and deaths is because it's none of my business, basically.
Yeah, I can see that perspective, yeah. I think it brings up a great topic that we could go into a little bit more, which is what is it to be like a feeling human being without carrying around concern in a way that's basically coming back to what we talked about earlier, which is somehow arguing with life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said on that on 9/11, there was a part of you that said, "I'm sorry for those people that are experiencing what they're experiencing." And it's a beautiful day.
Oh yeah,
my
conscious mind, if I was talking to somebody, would say, "Oh, isn't that terrible?"
Yeah.
And yet my feeling and what was going on in me was, "Gosh, it's just a beautiful day."
Yeah. I think, at least in myself, there's like different layers or levels of experience, and you know they can all be operating simultaneously. And for example, like from my heart center, I may connect to a situation and feel very deeply for those people.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe on a different layer, you could call it, maybe on the level, let's just call it like the level of spirit, like my nature as spirit, or some people might call it our absolute nature. There's this sense of, everything is as it is. And essentially, there's nothing in that perspective that at all that judges right or wrong or should or shouldn't. It just simply can't function in those ways. It's just a unconditional openness to life, however it's presenting,
mm-hmm.
and a sense of being that spirit of that which can never ultimately be harmed or touched or even. To some degree, even affected at all, except for perhaps on the human experience level of heart, maybe, you know, we might feel very deeply for an occurrence. So it's fascinating that there can be all these different experiences in us at the same time. At least that's my experience.
Yeah, and it keeps going back to who's experiencing this. or what is experiencing this. You know, if we just keep backing up, whatever it's experiencing, it's also what created it. So obviously, it doesn't make any mistakes. It doesn't create something that's wrong or right or good or bad. It creates for the sake of creativity, for the sake of aliveness.
And it's nature too, yeah.
That's the nature of what's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And
it doesn't have to have a reason. It's just simply expressing its nature as creative force.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not good or bad or anything. And we judge as little puny humans. We judge things as bad or good. And you know, if you ever say to someone, "Well, there is no good or bad," of course they look at you like you're some amoral monster. And that's on this level, but I think on the level of creation, there is as much fun, if you want to call it fun, in creating what we consider bad as there is in creating what we consider good. And nothing is created outside of that energy, so it's all the same. Hard to put into words.
I'd probably just go back to what I was saying, that it's the nature of consciousness to show up in all of these different manifestations, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some that our minds might call good or call bad, but it doesn't need to have a reason to. It doesn't work like the mind does. You know, the mind wants to have reasons or to understand it, and consciousness is just expressing its nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just simply how it's moving, yeah.
Our guest on the Earth Mystery Show today is Mukti, and I'm just going to tell people again and again, because somebody will call in about 5 minutes and say, "Who was that guest?" Mukti's our guest. She's going to be here March 5th from 7 to 9, and then March 6th all day at the Unity in the Gold Country at 180 Cambridge Court, Grass Valley. And Friday night, that March 5th Friday night, you will be talking and, you know, conversing with people, and then the retreat on Saturday is a, quote, silent retreat. I think I've got that all. And the number to call is 320, area code 530-320-1246. The lady named Kathy's number, 320-1246. She can give you directions if you need directions to the Unity Gold Country. Hopefully she can answer whatever questions people have about that. But I think it's pretty straightforward. If they show up at 7 o'clock at Unity of the Gold Country, you will be there.
Correct. Friday night, yeah, the 5th.
Right.
Great.
And some of the people I have on the show do, like, personal counseling, personal sessions. Are you going to do any of that when you're here?
Oh, no. Oh, I see. Like, private meetings with individuals?
Yeah. Some of the people who come and, like, let's say, do stuff like you're doing at Unity, like on Sunday, the following day, they will meet with people individually who want some time to talk or get something from you.
Yes. I won't be doing that, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
So no one's going to sign up to spend time with Mukti all by themselves?
Not in Grass Valley. I'm always available in the Bay Area. And then for people who live outside of the Bay Area, I'm available for private meetings by phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if they want to know more about you, the website?
The website is www.muktisource.org. That's MUKTISOURCE.org.
Okay. And I'm going to, if it's okay with you, I'm going to put this interview on the KVMR website. So in a few days or a couple of days, it'll be up. If people missed part of it or want to hear us talk some more, they can hear us all over again.
Haynes, I can't believe it. Is it concluding?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, that flew by.
It always does. It always does. It just goes by and by. And
I thought we were maybe halfway through. Gosh, it just flew.
It just flies by. And
yeah.
And I think people can get, hopefully they can get the flavor of you. Hopefully I'm not overpowering your flavor here. that being with you, or like being with Adya, your husband, is much more important than talk.
Mm-hmm.
Just being and stillness and transmission, or whatever you want to call it, all of the above. I would highly recommend people come and sit with you on March 5th and March 6th and just see what it's like, because I like that word induction. When you're near somebody that has what you want and you're open to it, you will vibrate on the same frequency as they do, and they will induce in you some of what's in them. I hope.
Yeah, not by any particular will.
No, not by will.
On my part, yeah.
No,
yeah.
But by you being you.
Yeah, another, just being yourself. Yeah.
Another person being still and being in your presence without trying to do something, just being open and being still, they will start vibrating like, you know, a bell in a room that rings will vibrate another bell.
Yeah.
In the room.
Yeah. And we all do that for each other, and hopefully when, you know, the people come, we'll all share a like intention to really discover the nature of ourselves and what is.
I hope.
And to discover an undivided state. So with that common intention, there can be a tremendous reverberation of the bell, you could say.
I hope. Well, our hour is up, and I've got to make way for Zentech. And would you give Adya a great big hug for me?
Oh, I will. I will, Haynes. I know he'll be very pleased to hear we spoke.
Thanks.
Okay.
Hope to see you March 5th and 6th.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Oh, what a wonderful person. And her husband, Adya, some of my favorite people in the world. If you want to wake up, you go hang out with her or Adya. I've got to go. But before I go, Glenn's in the room setting up, let's thank the underwriters for the hour.